This is Matt Katz. I'm filling in for Tanzina this week here on The Takeaway. Last year, 8 journalists were killed in war-torn Yemen. Since the outbreak of civil war in 2015, few Western journalists have been able to report consistently from within the country.
Because it's such a difficult conflict to get access to, this is not a conflict that is easy to report on.
That challenge of access to a country facing famine, cholera, and bloodshed has led some to call it the forgotten war. Nema El-Bagher just returned from 11 days inside Yemen. She's a CNN senior international correspondent, and her reporting is focused on the arms trail that the U.S. is leaving behind in the country.
So we wanted to see, if we get there on the ground, how easy is it to find this weaponry? And the answer is actually pretty easy.
I spoke with Nema about her reporting from her war zone where bad actors are getting access to American arms.
The situation is still very unstable. The ceasefire is not holding. That was our experience at the front lines, that just on any random day, actually there was incoming fire, incoming mortars from the Houthi positions, but also dangerous because you have this miasma, this swamp of uneasy alliances. So even on the side of the coalition, you are not necessarily in the best of hands when you're traveling in territory that's under the control of the coalition forces.
Sure. And now you said you found American-made weapons pretty much everywhere. What kind of weapons are we talking about, and which groups seem to be using them?
All of the groups under the aegis of the coalition that were fighting against the Houthi militias seem to have been given a pretty standard set of kit, and that was anything from high-tech American assault rifles all the way up to MRAPs, to mine-resistant armored vehicles. And the reason that's very troubling is because the MRAP is essentially the building block of how the U.S. prosecutes its wars. And because of that, it's considered to be very sensitive military technology, because in theory, if you get your hands on an MRAP and you figure out the vulnerabilities of the MRAP, if you're in the business of trying to put together an IED, an improvised explosive device, to exploit the vulnerabilities of the MRAP, it wouldn't be that hard to reverse engineer once you got your hands on an MRAP.
So how are these Iranian-backed Houthi rebels getting the MRAPs?
Most of those that we found, we were told, had been captured in conflict. And we were able to track the serial numbers of the MRAPs that the Houthi militias had paraded as booty of war, and track it directly back to a U.S. arms sale to the United Arab Emirates, and directly back to one of the largest U.S. manufacturers, one of the largest suppliers to the U.S. military. So this is quite a big deal for the U.S., for us to have found out that these MRAPs were ending up not just in the hands of Iranian-backed militias, but we spoke to sources who told us that Iranian intelligence had been granted access by the Houthis to the MRAPs. And that has to be very, very worrying for the United States.
Wow. Now, how does this jive with the arms sales agreement that the U.S. has with Saudi Arabia if this important military material is ending up in Iranian hands?
When you sign an arms sales agreement with a country, there is something called the end user agreement. So you, as the buying party, certify that you are the end user of this equipment. And in order to transfer that to another party, you have to receive from the Department of Defense what is called a transfer certificate. And we asked the Department of Defense, did you grant them a transfer certificate? And they said no. And they actually went further. And they said, not only did we not grant them a transfer certificate, but we have not authorized the transfer to any parties in Yemen.
And that would seem to be raise some concerns in the Pentagon, I'm sure. This might be a good time for you to help clarify a little bit about what we know about the sides of this conflict. I mean, you have the Saudis and the UAE-led coalition, which is funded in part by the U.S., and they're fighting against Houthi rebels supported by Iran. And then there's al-Qaeda that's in the mix here. Can you explain some of this to us?
Well, and I think that's really what, from a distance, hasn't been properly explained, I think, not just to the U.S. public, but to many of the actors, even in government, that when we got there on the ground, what we found was an al-Qaeda-linked militia. The founder of this militia, it's called the Abu al-Abbas militia, is actually on both the U.S., the Saudi and the UAE terrorist. And yet his militia has been folded into the Yemeni forces, the 35th Brigade. And because of that, is a recipient of coalition resources, which, of course, include US MRAPs. So you have this appalling alliance, which means that US weaponry is ending up in the hands of not just an Al-Qaeda funder, but also an Al-Qaeda trainer. When you look at the breakdown of why he is on the terror list in the United States, part of that is because the role that he has played as a trainer for Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, AQAP, in Yemen. And yet this is someone whose soldiers are now parading in American Oshkoshes, in American MRAPs. The Department of Defense told us that they had no idea that this was happening and that they would now be launching an investigation based on the findings that we had presented to them. But this has all been hiding in plain sight.
What kind of an effect is this weaponry having on the war, this American weaponry that seems to be ending up on all sides? What does it mean on the ground?
It means that it's very, very hard to force the parties to abide by any ceasefire agreement. It means that it's going to be very, very hard to pick up the pieces, because what we have seen in these conflicts around the world is that when you have this influx of weaponry, especially weaponry that is of the kind of quality as the kind of US weaponry that's flooding this conflict, it's very, very difficult to close Pandora's box and get people to abide by any kind of agreements. And we've seen that in Yemen, to the extent that even now, weeks after the ceasefire agreements were signed, because that hasn't actually translated into an actual ceasefire on the ground, people are starving. And there has to be responsibility taken for that. Because what does it mean for Yemen in 3 years,
right,
when the coalition has withdrawn, or when the world decides, oh, well, we have forced a peace agreement and now we can kind of wash our hands of this? I mean, when we arrived, the heartbreaking thing is that people really felt that the world had forgotten them. And that can only be reinforced and inflamed by this feeling that, well, it's American weaponry and it's an American ally that is prosecuting this war. So why do we as Yemenis matter?
Nema, thank you so much. Thanks for bringing us a story, and be safe if and when you return to Yemen.
Thank you so much for giving this the platform.
Nema El-Bagher is CNN's senior international correspondent.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.